Let's go up to our ring announcer.
The following podcast is scheduled for one episode and is our vantage point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Wrestling fans, and welcome to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. This is episode number 39, coming to you here on Monday, July 10th, 2017. I am Joe Murata, alongside the bad guy, Michael Quinn. How you doing, Quinn?
Howdy doody.
How's it going, man?
Good.
Can you believe we're only one episode away from ending season four?
I can't believe it.
It's pretty crazy.
What's going to happen?
There's going to be some crazy stuff going on next week for our season finale.
I say this every finale, but what's going to be the cliffhanger?
I don't know. We're going to have to find out.
I don't know.
Here. It's going to be
interesting. Have we ever had a cliffhanger in any of these?
You mean like a sitcom style cliffhanger?
Yeah, like to be continued.
Will Ross and Rachel get back together type of thing?
Yeah, like will Dan be alive? That kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know if we've ever done that. I don't know.
Did he almost die at the end of one season?
Yeah, the second to last season.
But he actually did die, which
in
was
real
revealed
life.
At the end.
Sorry. In real fake life. Yeah, in Roseanne's book.
Yeah, the book.
Yes, the book. So anyway, we are here to talk to you about the world of retro wrestling. Thank you, of course, for joining us. A couple of quick things. You can reach us on Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can tweet at us, and we like to do that. We like to tweet back at you, send you stuff. You send us stuff, talk to us, follow us, all sorts of good stuff. And of course, you can do the old-fashioned thing there and email us at OVPPodcast@gmail.com. That is OVPPodcast@gmail.com. And Quinn, we have a Facebook group that's really been heating up lately.
Actually, hold on. I have it open.
Okay.
It's called Our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast Facebook group. And you can go on there.
And what happens there?
Well, first of all, at the top, you'll see a picture of Bobby the Brain with Mary Hart and Andre the Giant's chest.
Yes, you will.
Because that's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
And then, more importantly, you can join the group and then you can discuss things with us.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any recommendations on things you want us to talk about, we're always looking for ideas.
Yeah, we got ideas galore right now, but put it in the hopper.
Put it in the hopper, TL hopper.
Yeah, TL hopper.
A lot of galore going on.
Yeah, a lot of galore, galoob.
And of course, you can go to our website, ovppodcast.com. But Quinn, there's some places to find this podcast besides our usual SoundCloud feed.
Yeah, you can go over to the Apple Podcast or iTunes, whatever you call it or they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go over there, subscribe, leave a review.
Yep.
We love the reviews.
We do love the reviews.
You could leave the review. You can also go over to Google Play Music and get it.
Yep.
Stitcher.
Who cares?
Oh, okay. That's Stitcher, I think, 2-3 weeks in a row.
I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. TuneIn.
TuneIn, yes. We love TuneIn.
TuneIn and Auto.
Auto Radio, yeah. Yes. And those are some places, Quinn. But obviously, there's another place.
Yes.
ThePlaceToBeNation.com.
It's a place.
And we be there.
We're being there right now.
We're being there. So what you can do is you can go there, listen to this podcast over there.
Yeah.
And then check out some other great ones. They have the flagship, the gold standard, if you will.
The Mother Sip,
The Place to Be Podcast, and a really good one on the Pro Wrestling Only feed.
Yes.
GF Allentown.
I like that one.
Peter Winston does a one-man show.
Yeah.
Reviews random shit.
Yeah, just random shows. Kind of like we do random shows, but he picks even more randomer shows than us, I think.
I feel like he does. And he does a great job, little one-man scenario there.
Yes.
One last thing I don't want to fail to mention. We have merch.
Yeah, we have the merch.
We have a shirt.
Yeah, OVT.
Shirt.
Yeah, OVT shirt.
Coming soon, the OVP coat.
Yeah, well, that will be necessary as we get closer to the fall months.
Yes.
Especially in this basement.
Yes, it's very chilly down here. And if you want to get that shirt, by the way, you can find that on teespring.com. That is teespring.com/OVP podcast. So with that said, we are here for the second to last episode of this season. And with that in mind, I want to deep dive into something we haven't gotten too into yet. We've mentioned him in passing. We've talked a little bit about him, but let's just get it out there. So let's get our scuba gear on, Quinn. And we'll talk about Jim Cornette.
Motherfucker.
Oh, That guy? Here, motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly.
Motherfucker.
Mr. Motherfucker.
So Jim Cornette is somewhat of a polarizing figure, although I'd say most people like him from what I've found.
The internet seems to like him. I don't know if you or I like him.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that I don't like him.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of get fatigued by him in this day and age.
I'll give him this. He entertains me. I like to listen to his rants at times. Sometimes I'll just scroll the YouTubes and, you know, that'll come up and I'll listen to him be mad about some dumb shit.
I'm going to pull you across this goddamn table, beat the fuck out of you.
And go on with my life because he's out of date and a dinosaur.
He's a T-Rex in a lot of ways. And, you know, Jim Cornette, whatever personal qualities he has, I'll give him this. Since coming up in the very early 80s, and he had a very cool gimmick as this rich, spoiled kid manager. It's essentially what it was. A mama's boy.
His mom got him in the wrestling or something.
Something like that.
He would allude to it.
That was the gimmick, yeah.
When I decided I wanted to take this step, I went to my mother, and I said, Mama, anything that I've wanted before, you've got for me. And this is what I want to make my career. And she said if it would make me happy, she would write the check and she would buy the contract.
And he used to have the tennis racket, and this guy, as an obnoxious, just bratty manager, drew a ton of heat
and
a ton of money in the 80s.
Well, let me tell you this. Jim Crockett Promotions, the NWA, everybody in a conspiracy, everybody trying to get me killed, trying to get me assassinated. Well, let me tell you something, Ronnie Garvin, it's not over yet. Even if the lawyers can't do it, we still got a little time. Every time we try to get him in the ring, his goofy brother tries to stop us. His goofy brother runs in and saves the day. Well, let me tell you something. I'm going to say this right now to the people of America. I am a good person.
Obviously, the feud that he rode the coattails of throughout the 80s into the 90s.
Oh, he rode them all right. And he's still riding them.
Was the Midnight Express versus the Rock and Roll Express. But you got to give Cornette credit, I would think, Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
The guy was, and still is, a hell of a talker and entertainer.
No, he was fantastic. And that's not really where the anger stems from with him.
Correct.
He did his job.
Fantastic manager.
Yeah, fantastic manager, drew heat. I can't really say enough about how good he was in the 1980s.
Okay, so putting on the table that we both agree, as many people will, that Cornette's one of the greatest managers ever. He didn't make our Rushmore. That doesn't mean we're right or wrong.
Well, he's kind of the poor man's Bobby the Brain Heenan
in a little sense.
Because Bobby the Brain was the same, like, I'm a rich guy.
And a hell of a talker, obviously.
Right, exactly.
And Cornette was also a very good commentator when he did it. I was always a fan of him on commentary.
He was okay.
He knew how to sell the product.
Brian Christopher rolls him up. Hands
up. Oh, no! Oh, my God! We're eating at Denny's because they're the moons over my hammy.
I'll give him this, too, before we move on to the things we don't like. He did, and probably still in a lot of ways, know the business a real lot.
No, he did, and he still does.
And he loved wrestling.
He has an old school opinion. He also can be credited with this as far as a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
He saved a lot of the Jim Crockett library of tapes.
He did.
Which, as you know, tape preservationists as we are over at this podcast,
right.
I can appreciate that because he said they were going to be thrown in the dumpster. So we might have lost
a lot of footage.
Yeah, and that might have been up to, you know, the YouTubers of the world to save not have a, like, what we have on the network right now.
Correct.
A lot of those episodes were the episodes saved.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah.
And another thing Cornette did, for better or for worse, is he invented the star rating system.
Right.
Which, fine, you know, but it is influential.
We discussed that.
We did. And it is influential, and it is a marker to rate wrestling matches, so you gotta give him that. He obviously had a mind for the business, worked his ass off throughout the 1980s, 1990s as well.
Yeah.
One of the things is, with Jim Cornette, and I'm sure this is where we can get into some of the other things that we don't particularly like about him. Now, Marty Howell, if you're out there listening, you might want to turn it off because you might not like this.
Okay.
And any of you other Southern wrestling fans.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they should listen, maybe why Northern fans don't like him as much.
Yeah, it is not our fault that we were born in the Northeast.
No.
Just like it's not your fault if you were born in Kentucky or Tennessee or wherever you're from.
You'll have to put that clip in there.
Yeah.
Down there in Kentucky or Tennessee, wherever you come from.
And you were raised with what you were raised with, and you have the preference to what you have a preference to. And we understand that.
We have our preference, too. I'm not saying we're any gem.
Nope.
I mean, we love hardcore ECW.
Sure.
kill yourself wrestling.
And,
so.
And we're also surprisingly okay with a lot of WWF that other people don't like.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So to each his own, no one is right or wrong. Like what you like, fine. However, yeah. Jim Cornette in 1991 decided to start Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Mm-hmm. That's wrestling the way you liked it, motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly.
And that promotion ran until the end of 1995. One of the things that Cornette tried to distinguish with Smoky Mountain is in the midst of WWF's cartoon, you know, style and the fading, you know, influence of the NWA
right
at the time, which was now becoming WCW during the Pizza Hut era.
Yeah, the Pizza Herd era.
Yeah. Trying to compete with Vince.
Yep.
Jim Cornette's like, you know what, motherfucker? Let's make a promotion that is just old school wrestling. Wrestling, however yeah. you say it. What do we think of this, Quinn?
I thought it was boring. We didn't need that at that time.
You don't think?
It was the wrong place at the wrong time. I don't even think that area was looking for that kind of wrestling.
I don't know. I wasn't there.
Well, I know because it didn't last very long. Well, obviously, it wasn't very successful.
It didn't make money because I think the way Cornette ran it, he didn't run it to make the profit or he couldn't. But I'll tell you what, people loved it down there.
Well, it's got its fans and they're loyal to it, but it's not very many. That's the thing, is it didn't have the mass appeal. Just like Paul Heyman's style didn't have the mass appeal.
Yeah, and the difference being that Paul Heyman's style was able to develop a cult-like following that eventually propelled it
past just a growing
that.
Promotion.
Correct. And Smoky Mountain had a lot of fans, Quinn, and still does.
Mm-hmm.
So I
respect that.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, I don't not respect it.
I just don't. Well, I just don't really like the product. I've seen a bit of it, and I was bored to tears and turned it off.
I mean, if their aim was to transport you back to the late 70s, early 80s, they did.
Yeah, that's the thing about it. It's like, he says it was to get back to that old school wrestling.
Yeah.
But when I think of the old school wrestling styles, I think of that Jim Crockett Promotions mid-80s, not 1978. I mean, seriously, yeah. you pick that up and you're like, what's going on here?
Right. Now, you know? From what I understand, Smoky Mountain was well booked.
Yeah.
Good storylines, old school flavor, mm-hmm. some good talent. But for me, so I want you to get our perspective, folks, a Northeastern fan that was raised and reared on WWF and mid-90s WCW.
Yeah.
To turn on a Smoky Mountain show from, like, let's say 94.
Yeah.
And you get Bob Caudle on there, which was the old NWA announcer. Yeah. I like him and everything. But in 94.
No, it's way past that.
Welcome to another action-packed, exciting hour of Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Wrestling the way it used to be and the way you like it.
And you're looking at, like, Tracy Smothers and crap like that.
Yeah.
It's jarring, to say the least.
Yeah. You're looking at guys that they don't look like superstars.
Right.
They don't look the part of professional wrestler at that point in time. The style they're wrestling
mm-hmm.
is not professional wrestling. It's professional wrestling.
Right.
And it's slow.
It
and
is.
It's boring. Maybe it's not boring. Maybe that's a little harsh, but it's slow. It's at a slower clip.
It's almost wrestling as if Vince McMahon Jr. never existed.
Yes.
And that might have been part of the mm-hmm. whole mentality there.
It's almost wrestling as if the Macho Man versus Ricky Steamboat never happened.
Well, okay, that's a good way to look at it. I will say this. I want to hear from you fans. You can do that on Facebook, on Twitter, wherever. If you have any experience as a fan at the time, especially,
yeah.
of Smoky Mountain, I do want to hear its appeal.
Yeah.
I want to hear what you thought of it.
Now, Jim Cornette, after this whole, I won't call it debacle, just not successful thing. How about that?
Yeah, he worked full-time for the WWF after that.
Yes, he went to the WWF.
Full-time.
Right? So he comes over there with his ideas, and, you know, he tried to implement them. I mean, we got the Tracy Smothers.
He was there.
And the TL Hopper.
Yeah.
And the Pug. And
the
all
Blue Brothers and all that.
Yeah, we got all that.
Right.
And we reviewed that, back to that Superstars in 94, we reviewed that, and that was probably the prime of a lot of those guys screwing around over there.
Yeah. You know, the thing is with Cornette's mentality is there were so many hands on deck in that 95, 96 period before Russo took over.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure what was him, except for, like you mentioned, the Tracy Smothers shit.
Yeah.
But whatever it wasn't working.
No, and it wasn't. And I think that's what Jim Cornette fans don't want to accept. is that he was driven out of the business because he wouldn't change. Mm. He wouldn't change with the times. He wanted to still book like it was 1981 when they're getting pounded by WCW, who's doing new things like the New World Order and stuff like that.
True.
Yeah, like it wasn't the time for this anymore. And I don't think there ever will be a time for that anymore. The fan is now accustomed to fast-paced, month-by-month storylines. They want it, and not to say that those are perfect either.
No, they're not.
But the modern wrestling fan doesn't want to hear this crap anymore.
I guess not. I mean, the thing that I have always thought about Jim Cornette, maybe he did have some great ideas in the 80s that worked for the 80s.
Yeah.
But you said it, Quinn. He didn't want to change with the times. And if you think of people that didn't want to change with the times, I can think of another comparison there. Vern Gagne.
I was just going to say, I was hoping you'd say, yeah. And there's a reason Vern went out of business. And it's that reason.
It's pretty much that reason.
Yeah.
It's kind of a pigheadedness, a stubbornness.
I mean, you got to know what your fan base wants. Say what you will about JR. He knew what the fan base wanted.
JR, yeah. And to an extent, Vince McMahon sometimes did.
Yeah, but he would rely on people. But the problem is now Cornette's in his ear, and he's a guy that doesn't want to change.
Yeah, I guess
Vince
so.
Vince needs to change. He really needs to change.
Right.
And you know who's sitting around? Jim Cornette's biggest nemesis,
mm-hmm.
his archenemy.
Yep.
Vince Russo.
He can't spell. He can't write. He can't speak English. He don't get in the Brooklyn or the Bronx or whatever the fuck. But I'm.
And that's a good way to start wrapping up here. We'll talk about that feud.
This is the feud that consumed the rest of Jim Cornette's
days to this day.
Yeah.
Now, we've made our opinions on Vince Russo clear. We don't think he's the greatest thing ever.
He is not.
He has probably done more bad than good, but it's about a toss-up, I'd say.
However, he did what needed to be done at the time.
Right.
Say what you will. He looked to Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
He looked around television.
Yep.
And he said, this is what's happening right now.
Yes.
Not being a chin lock for 30 minutes.
Right.
Like,
right. No, you're right.
Yeah.
And what Russo did then also wouldn't necessarily work now.
Yeah.
20 years later.
No, it wouldn't.
Same thing.
The whole thing is changing with the times. Now, do I think Russo, if you inserted him in under Vince McMahon's supervision this day? Yes, I do think
he does something.
He seems to be aware.
To an extent.
A little bit, at the very least, a little bit.
Unlike
Cornette, who rails on Lucha Underground for some reason and
right.
says it's not wrestling.
Hey, if it entertains people, people like it,
yeah.
people pay to see it.
Then it's doing what it's supposed to do. That's what the whole point of wrestling is to entertain and to pull in the crowds
yes.
and to give them what they want and to be relevant.
Yeah.
And to be something that keeps your attention.
Right. And that's not to say I'm an anti-traditionalist. I do appreciate
no.
a lot of Cornette's
exactly.
viewpoints.
I appreciate traditional wrestling.
I do.
As much as the next guy, but I don't think it has as much of a place. I think current wrestling should be the domain of change and new styles developing and things like that.
Right.
And I'm not a fan of what the WWE is doing right now,
mm-hmm.
but at least it's, you know, you look 2 or 3 years in the past and it was a little different than it is today.
To an extent, it was.
It keeps moving, right?
It does keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And what Cornette wants to do, if you want to use a baseball analogy here, is take it back into two cameras filming the entire game
yeah.
with one solo announcer
right.
and just bring it back to an era that it is not meant to be at right now.
No.
And
it
one,
probably never will be.
Yeah, exactly. It probably never will be.
That
but
time is past.
If you want to look back and reflect on it and enjoy it and be a fan of it, fine. No
yeah.
one is. No one is crapping
right.
on that.
However, he takes to the internet
yep.
or the airwaves or whatever he can get on,
mm-hmm.
and he goes on there and he rails on anybody trying to do new things. I mean, he hates Kenny Omega. I know that not everyone loves Kenny Omega, but at least he's doing something different and new.
True.
Like, and fun, and it's a change.
And
it's something.
Yeah.
Everything's got to be tried. Everything's got to be... He hates Joey Ryan for some reason.
Again, another very entertaining, talented wrestler.
Yes, and I mean, sure, maybe he's a little...
Over the top.
Over the top.
Yes.
But it's not like we haven't had characters like that. What is he talking about?
That's true.
Like, this is what I mean. When I think of Jim Cornette, I think of the meme, old man yells at cloud.
Pretty much.
Like, that's what I think of. And that's... kind of sad that he was reduced to that.
I know, unfortunately.
Like, and he never even, they brought him back for that Hall of Fame thing. And
yeah, it was fine. He wasn't bad.
The problem is that that gave him ammunition
against
Vince Russo. And now he's like, oh, look, the WWE cares about me. You're irrelevant. I'm relevant. Like, what do you mean you're relevant? Are you booking the show?
Like, what? That's true. It's a good point.
You're just some old man they trot
out
there.
In on.
Yeah, exactly.
That did something 30 years ago.
Because they want to probably put the Midnights in the Hall of Fame. That's the only reason he's there.
Yep.
And they're not going to have him make decisions.
No.
Yeah.
And a final word on Cornette before we wrap up here and go to break. He's got to get over this Vince Russo hatred.
Yes.
It's unhealthy.
Yeah.
It's clearly like almost an obsession.
Right?
Yeah, I would say so. And I think he needs to get over it. But overall, Quinn, I'd say, in my point of view, Cornette, very talented, did a lot for the business, very entertaining, drew a lot of money.
A little misguided,
has some very good fundamental viewpoints on wrestling. I'm not going to argue with Jim Cornette. He knows the business better than either
His
of us.
His view on kayfabe is pretty solid, a little old school, but you know, it could be used to, I think the WWE could use that at the very least.
Yep. But overall, he kind of just needs to, you know, get over some things that are going on now, I would say.
He needs to just let it go. It's over.
It's
him
over.
And Russo are not in the business anymore.
Yeah, so just
let
it
leave
go.
It alone.
Just leave it alone. Say what you want to say, but it doesn't mean anyone's going to listen.
Yep.
Back after this.
I'm Jim Cornette, pro wrestling manager, genius, friend of small furry woodland creatures, and I've got a problem. No entertainment. You know, I hate sports. They're dull, they're boring, they're always on strike. And those talk shows like Jenny Jones and Ricky Lake, Jerry Springer, what a wimp he is. There's not enough fights. Reality TV? Boring. Three of the members of my immediate family are on America's Most Wanted, but finally I found something that even got me excited. Smoky Mountain Wrestling. And in the next couple of minutes, I'm going to tell you just exactly what you've been missing.
Oh, bitch, bitch, bitch.
You're listening to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, the fastest growing weekly episodic retro wrestling audio podcast in the world.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, here on episode number 39, Monday, July 10th, 2017. Thank you for being with us, Quinn. It is time for Mount Rushmore and Death Valley, where we will put four of the best of something onto Mount Rushmore, and four of the worst go down in the desert of Death Valley. Quinn, what do we got this week?
Well, it's another request.
Good.
It just so happens to turn out it's by somebody that did one before.
Okay.
But I thought it was a good idea, and I think we can do it justice.
Okay, let's do it some justice.
So, Jeff Applegate.
Oh, again, wow.
We got another one
All
for
right.
him. I think it's going to be a good one.
Okay.
And it is... Title Belt Designs.
Ooh, Title Belt Designs. Okay, we only briefly talked about this a long time ago.
I think we actually did, like, we talked about belts or something.
We talked about the Winged Eagle specifically.
Yes.
But now we get to go into the four best and the four worst.
Yes.
I guess the only criteria here that I can think of is it has to be a belt that, like, we know about. So if we don't know of one, folks, and you do, it's not going to make Rushmore or Death Valley.
Right.
Like, there could be an independent belt that we don't know that was really bad.
Yes, exactly.
So, all right.
So
I have the pick.
Yeah.
Winged Eagle, man. How do you not?
I think that would be definitely the first one. That belt is a classic.
Yeah, it was ran for about 10 years, 88 to 98.
It was like the shine it had on it.
It just looked like a champion's belt, man.
It is like the belt I think of.
Right, and I'll just explain real quick. The Winged Eagle was the WWF world title belt from 88. Hogan was the first one to have it for that main event match against Andre.
Right, it just magically appeared.
Yeah, it just magically appeared.
Yeah.
How much money did they spend on the plastic surgery, man?
And it was one Savage had, and Warrior, and Hogan again, Slaughter, blah, 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 all the way up to Steve Austin. He won it from Shawn.
And then he threw it down and took the other one, and the rest is history. Even though there was the one appearance with Kane.
In a case or something.
In a case or something.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about.
Austin was on the Zamboni.
Yes.
And look at the podium, and that, woo, it's
a new WWF. A new WWF title belt.
Austin Austin on the way in here.
Yeah, that
that's
whole thing.
Absolutely real.
Yeah.
That's totally
and
what
that's
happened.
The last time we saw it, and then it became the hardcore title.
Yeah, allegedly.
Yeah.
So, Winged Eagle, to me, that was obviously the world title belt. when I got into wrestling and when you got into wrestling.
Yeah.
And to me, it just screams this is the pinnacle of being the champion in the WWF.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. I really, really like that title belt.
I think we have no real
objections.
Debate here.
Yeah,
no,
that one's an easy one.
Winged Eagle for Mount Rushmore. All right, Quim, what do you got?
I think the other easy one is the classic Intercontinental title from
85.
Guess, yeah, 85
to 98.
Did a Macho Man was the first to have it, or who
Tito
had it?
Santana.
Tito. Okay, yeah, Tito had it.
The way they did that was pretty cool, actually. There was an angle where Valentine destroyed, or maybe it was the other some one of them destroyed the other's old crappy one.
Okay,
and that's why the new one came into being.
Gotcha. The green one.
Yeah, the shitty old WrestleMania one. You can see it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, about that.
That's gorgeous.
And that's the one that, Savage had. That was, like, the iconic.
It's still the title.
Like, it still is. They went back to it.
So, yeah, in the late 90s, they tried to have a new design.
And it was horrible. Horrible.
You hate it. I don't think it's the worst thing I've ever seen, but it's, like, this, like, slim kind of thing. And here's the thing about that belt is that it made the Intercontinental title look less important.
Yes, it did, and it coincided with it being less important.
Right. So when they brought back the regular one, everyone was happy. And it's the one that's still used today. It's probably the only belt that is in its like original, well, not original, but semi-quasi-original form. The one that people remember.
Yeah, the classic.
Yeah.
The iconic, the one that Warrior had.
Yeah.
Shawn.
Yes.
Razor.
Yes.
That one.
Yeah, the good one.
The good one. I love that belt, and I think I'm going to have to agree with you. I can't think of anything else that would knock that off.
Right, exactly. And, some of these Rushmores, I always say, are, two, and then it's everything else.
Yeah.
Three, maybe sometimes it's three and everything else. Sometimes it's one and everything else. But there's always those couple that are like it.
Yes.
And this is one of those situations.
This is one of those situations. So I would say the classic 1985 to 98 Intercontinental Championship belt design goes on Rushmore.
And restored.
And design. The restored version. Yeah. You with me?
Yep.
Let's do it. All right, Michael. I'm gonna bring one to the table for you.
Okay.
See if we can start getting into the nitty and the gritty.
Mm-hmm.
Big gold belt, NWA world title.
My big gold belt. I have a love-hate relationship with it.
Okay, what is it?
I like its size.
Very
I was
big.
Always a fan of the size. I think it exemplifies world title. I also like that it has a nameplate on it.
Yeah, I used to like that too.
That's kind of cool. It was one of the, it wasn't the first belt, but it was the one that was most prominent. And you could always look forward to the new champion would switch it, and it was kind of cool.
Ronnie Garvin had it.
Yeah, but the problem with it is that it has this weird, kind of scribble design or mosaic design to it.
Right.
And you can't really tell what the hell's on the rest
of
the belt.
Yeah, what is that?
There's like a globe.
In the middle.
There's like a globe, right, with a crown on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest is just surrounded by this swishy gold.
Like scribbly.
Yeah, it's almost like somebody it was still melted and somebody just swished their hands all over it or something. I don't know. It's just a weird thing.
So
I think it says World Heavyweight Champion on it.
It does.
The other thing that's weird about it is that I don't think, at least by the end of it, it didn't even have the what company.
Did it just say World Heavyweight Champion?
Yeah.
I think it did.
Yeah, and I don't think WCW, it said WCW on the top. Maybe WWF added on the tip.
They modified
WWE
it anyway.
Slightly, but that's all they did. And they might have removed it at the end too. It's possible. I don't recall exactly, because by then the big old belt was kind of redundant.
Correct.
And that's another thing with that belt. At one point, it became the other world title.
Yeah, the world title.
Yeah, and to me, that always took away from its prestige. They tried to say it's it goes back to George Hackenschmidt and all this crap, and first of all, it didn't.
It didn't anyway.
Yeah. No.
I don't know. Folks, if you are a belt aficionado, why don't you let us know what you know about belts and your favorites, and your least favorites. You can do that by obviously tweeting at us at OVP Podcast, or leave us your four best and worst on Facebook.
I got one.
Okay, go ahead.
I always liked it. You may not like it.
Mm-hmm.
The NWA mid-80s world championship, I kind of like that. It's unique.
I don't mind it.
It's a unique title. And I always thought that's what they were going for with the Intercontinental title, because it's that same style, that sleek
It's shape. Sleek, yes.
Yeah, and I like the little, like, it says USA on the front, but it's got all the countries, mm-hmm. and it's kind of a cool, and it has the world, the globe. It kind of comes out of it slightly.
Right.
It's not recessed. What is it? The opposite of that?
Like protracted.
It's like protracted out. So it's got that going for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I always liked that it was proclaimed as 10 pounds of gold.
Yep.
And it had like its personality to that belt.
It did. Yeah, that was pretty good actually.
Yeah,
that was not a bad belt. You know which one was really good?
What?
WCW TV title.
Yeah, that's another one I like too.
That one might make it. Actually.
I really like the TV title.
Yeah.
Also, there's something utilitarian about it. It just feels like this thing's going to be moved around a lot. There's a look to it, you know. It's like a very basic design,
but it looked official, right?
It looked official. It looked legit.
Yeah.
And I know some people. We're not talking about that like Arn Anderson red kind or whatever that
the
was.
Mid-90s one, the late 90s
one. Yeah, the mid-90s one that got traded around a lot.
The Fit Finlay era.
The Fit Finlay, Steve Regals,
yeah,
and
exactly.
all that stuff.
Didn't Jericho too?
Jericho had it for a while. Jericho really kind of made that title mm-hmm. big in that era.
The king of all loopholes is the king of television now. The world's television title holder.
And I like that one
a
lot.
Yeah, I did like it a lot too. Oh, man, there's a lot more too.
What, you got any others?
I always liked, actually, and I brought this up in another show, I like that NWA tag title that made its way to TNA.
Yeah, that's
you know,
right.
That
you
one's
brought
pretty
that up.
Good.
Those like, are good.
Those are good tag belts.
Are they better than the WWF's classic
See,
tag
that's,
belts?
See, that's where it comes, and I don't know if this is just me, like, nostalgia-ish, but I always liked those tag belts, too. Although, I didn't like them when they were silver. I liked when they became gold.
Yeah, when better. They were silver until, what, like the Hart Foundation era or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, the Hart Foundation maybe of the last...
I think they were.
I remember Demolition having them. They weren't silver.
Yeah,
anymore.
They had the normal ones.
The gold ones.
Right.
Yeah.
I like those. I never liked them as much as the Intercontinental and World.
Yeah.
They didn't stand
they always
out
kind of played
as much.
Second fiddle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Second banana, if you will.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that one.
And what did you think of the blue WWF title, the one that preceded after the Winged Eagle?
They call it the Big Eagle.
The Big Eagle.
The one that Austin had, and then he had the Smoking Skull. But
yeah. No, but that one.
That
and then,
one.
And then Triple H kind of regularized it.
Yeah. I like that one a lot, too.
Yeah, that one's really good.
That one was really good. It was basically a bigger, less majestic, but still very impressive version of the Winged Eagle.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
I wouldn't say it was Mount Rushmore, per se, but we had to discuss it just in case.
I don't think I'd put it on Rushmore either, no.
And what do you think of the current WWE title?
It's neither here nor there with me.
Yeah, nothing.
I wouldn't say it would ever make Death Valley.
No.
But it's definitely not one of the best belts I've ever seen. It's very generic.
Right.
You know,
there's
nothing special about it.
Yeah. I just like the idea of the big WWE on it because it's the first time they're like acknowledging that, like, you know, wrestling's different now. Wrestling, if you're the WWE champion, you're the champion.
Right.
Like, and there's something bold about it that I like that it's just the big logo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of cool.
No, I agree with you. You know what? I'm going to throw a wild card out there for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because for what it was used for and for what it was set out to accomplish, it was a little tongue-in-cheek. But you know what a great title belt design is? The hardcore title.
Yeah, the hardcore title is. It represents what it was. And I remember, just on the belt design end of it,
mm-hmm.
there's a couple things. The fact that WCW tried to copy it, but they couldn't even, like, figure out that the appeal was that it was all smashed up.
Yeah, they had a nice new belt.
They had a nice new shiny belt that had, like, cracks in it or something,
yeah, it was,
right?
Yeah, like, it was fake cracks.
Yeah, it was, like, fake cracks. It was like, what? Yeah. No, the hardcore title is great, too, because rumor has it goes back to Mr. Perfect smashing it on Saturday Night's Main Event or
but
something.
But that's not really that belt.
This is the WWF Hardcore Championship Belt. And Mick, you've earned it.
I don't know. Whatever it is, it was cool, and it represented what it was. It was held together by duct tape.
It was awesome. It was written like hardcore champion on it.
Like
marker.
On the duct tape and marker. Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool belt.
I think, and we're not doing this to be WWF fanboys here, but I think that might have to make it.
As far as, it's unique, and it's different, and it represents what it is. It kind of hits all the check marks.
I think we should put it on.
I do too.
All right, let's put it on. The hardcore title will be number 3 on Mount Rushmore. Big gold?
No.
No.
No. Okay. No go for me.
So
what about
I would have gone there.
WCW United States title. I actually like that one.
It's okay, but I think
not the current one.
No, the one, Raven, that, Goldberg,
yeah,
that
like
era, Conan.
That belt looked very respectable to me. I always liked it.
Better than the TV?
It was like a toss-up, but yeah. I really like that belt.
You know what I like, Quinn? The ECW World Heavyweight title belt from,
yeah,
you know, ECW, mid-90s, late 90s.
Cool, it was very similar.
To the IC, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, it was very... No, you're thinking of the tag titles.
You're right, yeah.
Like the IC titles. Yeah, they were just knockoffs.
Same belt maker. What's his name?
Reggie Parks.
Reggie Parks.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Same belt maker did all these classic designs.
Right.
Now, did you know this, as a side note on the big gold belt? That was actually made by a belt buckle maker. And that's why it kind of looks like a big belt buckle.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I know it was made especially for Ric Flair.
It was, right? Was he the first guy to have it?
And he had it forever.
Yeah,
and
he didn't
more
return
than
it
anybody.
Because he had a deposit on it, remember? Yeah. And he brought it to WWF.
Right. And you know what? That brings me back to the NWA mid-80s title before the big gold belt.
Uh-huh.
It also has that allure of that there was a deposit to just have it.
To actually
like,
have it,
there's
yes.
There's something to that belt. Like, I can't put my finger on it, but I've always felt that there's something special.
I think you might have a good case for that, except I just thought of one that might break the bank here. No pun intended.
Okay.
The $1 million title.
Yeah, the $1 million belt is cool.
How do you beat that, Quinn?
I give you, Brother Love,
oh boy,
the $1 million championship belt.
Wow.
Holy Toledo.
Way-ho!
That thing was awesome looking.
It is a cool belt.
It was a diamond dollar sign belt.
Yeah, but also it has the dubious honor of, like, it's been with weird people like Ted DiBiase Jr. and Virgil.
Virgil's great. Let's not make fun of Virgil.
I'm just saying.
Check this out now, man. Okay, an alligator is just moving straight side to side.
I'm just saying.
Steve Austin had it too, Quinn.
Yeah, as the ringmaster.
Yeah, I'm the ringmaster.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's an awesome looking belt.
Are there
belt.
Any novelty belts we're missing? What about the...
Smoking Skull.
What about the FTW title?
Taz's Fuck the World title?
Yeah.
It was pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it was actually a really cool belt.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Oh, the Fuck the World title.
Yeah.
The FTW title. That was pretty good.
Yeah, that is. And I think it'll look better than the Million Dollar title looks cool, but it's indescript.
Today I want to talk about saying stuff wrong.
Also.
I mean, it's a $1 million title.
I know. But if you want to, if you want to put money into the equation, the NWA title had the $24,000 deposit, so.
I like the big gold better.
The big goal. Really?
I really do.
Ugh, no.
All right. If we're going to reach an impasse, I'm not even going to bother.
Yeah, I can't even with
that. Fine.
I like it. I just don't think it's like Mount Rushmore material.
Now, what did you think of the unified title the WWF had for a while there?
I don't know. Like, I always felt like it should have been better, but that might have been expectations, too. It's
true.
Like, it's the great unified WCW, WWF. It should be, like, the greatest belt ever designed.
Right.
And it just seems so, like, just the look of it even seemed, like, temporary.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's just like, this exists.
Not much thought was put into it.
Yeah.
I don't know, Quinn. You're pushing hard for the NWA world title,
There's
not
the
big gold.
I'll settle on this. The NWA or the TV. I really like the TV title.
If it's between those two, I'm going TV. Does TV trump, in your mind, the $1 million title?
Yeah. The $1 million title would barely change hands. There's something special about that belt.
The TV?
Yeah. I just always like thought it looked cool, and I like that it's kind of like the size of it is somewhat smaller, so they kind of could carry it around and like hold it up. And
it's made for TV.
Yeah. It's the belt that you just hold when you win things. Like,
but it had meaning to it.
Yeah.
And it had a nice look to it.
And it kept its prestige, even when it was in a dumpster. And it kept it. People were like, bring that back. And then they wouldn't. Like, it was like, what?
It was bad. Does it trump the original or the previous before the big gold NWA World Heavyweight title? The one you were talking about.
That one's, that's where I'm at an impasse with. I really like that. You seem to not like it as much, though.
I'm not as nostalgic or romantic towards it, no.
I'll compromise with you.
TV?
TV. WCW
television. I always liked it.
Yeah, I always liked it.
I always liked it, too. I say we're fair game to put that on. I can't think of any other WWF ones I like more.
And you didn't like the WCW tag belts, the ones that Scott Hall,
it was always
missing piece on the side.
I like the WWF tag titles more than that.
Okay.
So I think TV title, WCW TV title is
and
the best one.
We went through all the ECW belts.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, there's no other you can think of. Any other feds, as I said back then.
That I like better than the TV?
Mm-hmm.
Not really. Like, not even the AWA world title was that
belt
great.
Looks like junk.
Yeah.
It's a trying too hard title.
I think WCW TV title it is for number four. Are you okay with that?
I'm okay with that.
Let's throw it on then. So that'll be number four. So to recap here, because I know Donnie, our friend here, likes that.
We'll be saying that for so many episodes, aren't we?
Yes. The WWF Winged Eagle, the classic Intercontinental, the hardcore title, and the WCW TV title from the mid-late 90s, etc.
Yep.
So that's four of the best. Quinn, let's do four of the worst. You want to throw one at me?
How about you go first?
Okay, no problem.
Yeah.
I have one for you. The Divas Championship.
Championship!
Which, wait, the
Tramp Stamp.
The Tramp Stamp belt.
That thing sucked.
That belt is terrible.
It was an embarrassment.
Yeah.
It
exemplified what was wrong with the women's division at the time.
Absolutely. It looked stupid. It didn't matter. It was basically, I don't want to say it was objectifying women, but there was a reason they made it look the way it did.
It was a butterfly.
It was a freaking butterfly.
I mean, that nothing says I'm a fighting champion like butterfly.
And not only that, well, Muhammad Ali floated like one.
Yeah, well, he didn't have a butterfly belt.
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
But not only that, Quinn, what was the name of it? The Divas Championship. And do you remember a couple of years back now it was, right, when they switched over finally to the Women's Championship and they made it look like a mini version, a slightly smaller
title.
Version of the world. Everyone rejoiced.
They did.
And that should say something.
Yes.
That should speak volumes.
Now, I'll actually give you the tramp stamp. You can put it on right now.
Yeah, you want to just do it?
Yeah, just put that on because I have a topic after that.
Okay, so let's put the WWE Divas Championship on to Death Valley.
Now,
yes,
just like you said, they had the mini world title.
Mm-hmm.
That started something that I think in the belt design was busted as hell.
Okay, what is that?
And it was the Universal title, the SmackDown women's title, that whole thing, copying the belt, any of the copies.
So basically the homogenization of all these belts.
Yes, because there were four belts now, and they all look the same.
Yeah, and what is right in the middle of all of them?
The WWE
logo.
Yeah. And then not only that, they took the penny belt, the penny tag team
those
belts.
Tag belts.
And then they were like, SmackDown needs one. So what do? They make a blue one, right?
Yeah.
And they make them quarters now. They're silver.
Yes. You know what? That brings me to a very good contender here, Quinn.
Yeah.
Those tag
the
belt
penny belts,
design, they're horrible.
Yeah, they might be worse.
They're horrible. They look like hubcaps.
They look like hubcaps. I don't know why there's two Spartan helmets on it. Like,
I don't know.
So what does that have to do with tag teams?
So Vince doesn't want to go to pro wrestling because that's what his dad did, but he's fine with going to Roman Gladiators instead.
I don't understand. Is that from like the Royal Rumble where Vince was dressed up like Caesar on the cover? You remember that?
No.
Like the whole, you don't remember that poster where the whole family was dressed up like they were like
but that's awesome.
Romans?
No, that's funny as hell.
Yeah.
I remember the Caesar came to Rumble 93.
Yeah, no, this was Vince, Shane, Stephanie, and Linda dressed up like Roman dictators or something.
Perfect.
On the cover of the Royal Rumble poster.
That's amazing, actually. No, I don't remember that one, but those belts suck. However, I have another one that I never liked, and I know you're going to try to justify it.
Okay.
The spinner. The fucking spinner. The John Cena spinner belt.
I didn't like it. However, I think there is a belt that trumps it.
Okay.
The United States title spinner was a lot worse than that.
The one that he had before that, right? In
2004
or whatever.
That was more gaudy and dumb to the point where JBL blew it up in a trash can.
Well, but Quinn,
the font was like in script or something. Like,
font.
Like everything about it was like worse, at least. That thing, like, could be modified to have the thing not spin.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, I know what you mean, but isn't it worse to have the world title with a spinner on
you're
it?
You're right. And the fact that it lasted so long does hurt its chances.
Even when it didn't spin anymore, it was still that same stupid MySpace-era design.
Yeah, it was just like they were like, it was almost like they spent a lot of money on the you can put that in. It's like they spent a lot of money on the design.
Spent a lot of money.
And they were like, oh shit, like John Cena's not as rappy anymore, so we can't like have it spin. Like, what do we do? Like,
I know. And the thing is it just didn't look like a world title to me. You think of world titles, you think the Winged Eagle, the Big Eagle, yeah. Even that unified piece of crap.
And even John Cena, here's the thing, is John Cena at one point, he went from like goofy rapper to like respected professional wrestler.
And wasn't that already by, like, 06?
Yes, it was, like, while that belt still existed, so right. It really didn't make any sense anymore.
Didn't he pretty much drop the rap gimmick when he became champion?
I haven't heard him rap in years. And, in fact,
well, The Rock, he did
his bland personality, I can't imagine him rapping.
Some of you like, all cheer me, some of you all boo me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't even, like, that's how... The big departure John Cena went away from what he was. It's like you can't. He just looks like Mr. Boring Man now. Like, I'm 40 and
great
blah, blah,
wrestler.
Yeah,
though.
I'm a fantastic wrestler.
He
but
is.
You know what? I'm not doing that rap stuff anymore.
Yeah, rap is crap. As I said, I don't know. So we got the Divas Tramp stamp on there, but I have another one for you,
geez,
Michael.
You're really throwing them out.
I'm trying to throw you a bone here. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I'm gonna give you one more. The one that Hogan won from the Iron Sheik, that green piece of garbage can lid shit.
Yeah.
What was that?
You know I hate that belt.
That thing was a piece of trash.
The problem with it, it's too cluttered. First of all, it's got all those names on the side of it, right? But it looks like somebody's trying to, like, get Elmer's glue and, like, stick them all on there. And it's like, not straight or anything.
Right.
And then you got the Olympic man in the middle. Yes. But he's, like, holding, like, I don't know, like a cup or a trophy or some nonsense. But the rest of it just looks like a flat plate with nothing on it.
I know.
It. Like,
and why is there an Olympic man? Nothing says wrestling, yeah, like that, professional wrestling.
That belt. And it's too big on, like, everyone. Like, even Hulk Hogan, it was too big. They were like, we can't have this anymore.
You want to throw this in, don't you?
That belt sucks.
It was an ugly piece of crap. Let's put it in.
For the world title, they really thought that would be a good idea.
That might be worse than the spinner, because at least the spinner was relevant to its era.
Yeah, what do you think of the other titles that existed in the WWE prior to the national expansion?
I mean, the one we just mentioned is the most offensive one that I can think of.
There's one I can think of, but I don't know if it's acknowledged a lot, and I'm not even sure which one it is. I just see people wearing it. I think Ric Flair had it, so then it probably is the United States title, the one that's shaped like America. America,
fuck yeah! That one's doofy.
Yeah.
Very, very doofy.
It's a plate of gold cut out into the shape of America.
But you got to give it credit, though. It's a United States championship. It's relevant.
I get it, but I think it's a little too on the head. Like, it's a little too...
ham-fisted.
It's like, yeah, we get it. You could have just put the letters U.S. on this. Like, you don't need to shape it like the country.
What if it was a flag?
By the way, you know, there's another problem with that belt.
Yeah.
How do you put Alaska and Hawaii on it? Where are they?
They should have been on the side plates, one on each side.
What is he, the 48th state champion?
Right, like, only the continental U.S.,
Is he the continental champion?
The congruous U.S.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can call that the worst, though, Quinn, when we have the freaking spinner still floating around.
The spinner,
spinner.
What do you think of Smoke and Skull? I don't
like
that belt.
Yeah, stupid.
And I know you don't like that other Intercontinental belt, too.
You know what? Yeah, hang on here.
Okay,
the 98,
let me bring that up.
The one that started in 98.
Yeah.
It is literally looks like a kid drew it. It's just like a boring, ovular, like oblong
it's
plate.
It's like the globe is wrong.
It's so fucked up. I don't personally
think it's like the worst thing I've ever seen.
It's not.
It's not, but it's bad. It is bad.
It's bad, Quinn.
And it started like a bad trend.
For the title, yeah.
Yeah.
But is it worse than the Smoking Skull? I hated that piece of shit.
Yeah. Did The Rock have a Brahma Bull one that I'm thinking
there,
of?
Here's the thing.
And how long did that exist?
That's actually a good question. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. Even at the time in 98, 99, remember the old stuff like rahawf.com, like
old
wrestling news
sites,
WrestleZone or whatever. Yeah. It was reported that The Rock would be debuting that belt because it was made. He never actually used it.
So it
though.
Never appeared on TV.
No.
Has it been seen, like, has it seen the light of day in some form or fashion?
I think it's on websites about belts and stuff. Yes, but it was never actually used.
Gotcha.
But the Smoking Skull is a piece of crap.
Yeah.
I didn't like it because I didn't like that Austin forsook this brand new, nice, big Eagle belt.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I want my own damn belt.
Yeah.
And I never thought it was good.
It started that trend of like oh, people are going to have custom belts to, like, what the hell? Like, even Hogan, like, the, okay, I know Hogan and Flair did, but they weren't, like, I know Ric Flair said Ric Flair on it, but it said whoever's name was the champion.
Correct.
It was like, you could change it, right? Like,
yes.
And I know Hogan's belt was designed to kind of be his size, I guess, or something. Like,
yeah,
that
the Hogan one from, like, WrestleMania 3.
Yeah.
That one.
And that one's
a good.
A little before 86 also.
That one's really good.
That one's actually good. But again, it could have been, like, anybody could have won that.
True.
Like, it didn't look like it was, like, just to them.
No,
it
but
looked
it was
like
good.
A title belt.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got into this, we're going to put their logos and shit on it. Like, no.
Yeah. But like, the worst example to me is a spinner.
Yeah.
Of that whole thing.
The spinner's pretty bad.
I think we throw the spinner in, Quinn.
Okay. Okay. I'll give
I
you the spinner.
I hated that belt.
Yeah.
I cannot believe they used it as long as they did.
Okay.
It was on so many different people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Randy Orton had
CM
that.
CM Punk.
Sheamus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like anybody had it.
And
like,
it just, it made it
Alberto
look
Del Rio.
Yeah. That,
like, really?
I know.
That doesn't fit him at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It just didn't fit anyone but Cena, but it fit like 2004 Cena.
Yeah, it didn't even fit the Cena that had it most of the time.
Correct.
It wasn't even, Cena wasn't that anymore.
No. So, yeah. Throw
yeah.
it in?
Yeah.
And, all right. It'll be number three. With one more to go, do you have anything, Quinn, to bring to the table?
What about that WCW Hardcore title that we briefly talked about? And
that
plus, it has the dubious distinction of being one of the belts that had the new WCW logo on it.
Oh, the logo that
that's
put
sucks.
Them in the toilet, yeah. basically, right?
That our friend from back in the day, he used to always say that WCW fell apart because the logo changed.
It did.
Yeah.
That was one of the biggest reasons,
with the,
obviously.
With the big long C in the middle that you couldn't really tell if that was, and you couldn't even tell if those were W's. Like,
right, it was awful.
You couldn't tell what you were looking at. Yeah,
like a freaking art poster.
It was like it was stretched out, and then someone swished it back together.
Just changed the aspect ratio or something.
Yeah, they like messed up or something.
That hardcore title that we talked about with the fake like cracks in it and
the
stuff.
Fake cracks. It exemplified how shitty their hardcore division was, how like fake the whole they were like, let's do hardcore, and then they're like fighting in like the middle of like dumpsters on fire, like in a parking lot with like trucks and stuff.
It was so prefabricated.
Yeah, it was so like, it was just like the WCW of the early 90s when they would do these big over the top,
yes,
like present, like the, it reminds me of stuff like the monster truck match.
Yeah,
and like,
right, exactly.
Even though I like that, but it reminds me, and that was like not what hardcore wrestling was.
No,
like,
it was fighting at Funtime America or backstage and having referees try to pin you. You
or
know,
it was using like barbed wire bats and like having barbed wire ring ropes, like like dangerous
the real stuff,
right? Yeah.
And WCW, of course, just WCW-ified it.
Yeah.
But is that belt worse than the pennies of the tag titles that are now?
The pennies.
They're awful, Quinn. I cannot believe that's a title. Belt.
Actually, the pennies are, but you know what's worse, actually?
What?
The fact that they thought that they could just make a second version of the SmackDown quarters might be worse than the original pennies because they're derivations of something that sucks so bad already.
Well, you're really making some sense there.
Yeah.
How about we put them both in that overall design?
They suck. The Spartan tag belts or whatever.
Yeah, the current SmackDown and Raw tag belts just suck. They look like change I found in the couch. They're going into Death Valley. Well, there you have it. I'm not even recapping this one. Figure it out for yourself and let us know your best and worst title belt designs. I know there's stuff we missed and stuff we're not aware of, so send us pictures. Put them on Facebook. Tweet us those pictures because we want to see some of the worst that maybe we've never heard of or some of the best. And you can do that, of course, by going at OVP Podcast on Twitter, or you go to our Facebook group, or simply email us at OVPPodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, when we come back, we're reviewing something. Back after this.
How about this?
What is that?
This happens to be the real championship belt.
That's not Hogan's belt, Brain. I know the champ's belt when I see it.
You're right. Comparing this belt to Hulk Hogan's belt would be like comparing ice cream to horse manure. Comparing the men that wear these belts would also be like comparing ice cream to horse manure. You see, the man that owns this belt is right now under contract to another organization. But in the very near future, he might be coming to the World Wrestling Federation. The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name. This man not only has challenged Hogan on numerous occasions, unanswered, may I add. But if you want to compare him, fine. Then let's compare Hulk Hogan to Ric Flair.
Flair.
Hey, it's Sean Mooney. I may no longer be in the event center, but if I was, I'd be talking about our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. All right, boys, let's get to it.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, episode number 39. It is time to review something, Quinn. We're reviewing something.
Oh, we're reviewing something.
Yeah, this is...
And I think Ruben's going to really like this.
Ruben is really going to like this one.
Yeah.
Now, this is another fan request, as our mission here is to get to all of them if possible. This was requested, in a sense, by Travis Volt, a big fan of ours, comments a lot, gives us some good suggestions. He wanted us to do the AWA Team Challenge series. So we picked an episode of the AWA that involved this, and it does, as
well,
you'll see.
I might disappoint Travis there.
It's
but
mentioned.
It's mentioned.
So it's we're doing what we can here with what we have to work with.
Right.
There's no specific pay-per-view or like show that's like, this is Team Challenge.
Right.
But it's mentioned. It's involved.
Mm-hmm.
And this is AWA, American Wrestling Association, Championship Wrestling from June 4th, 1990. Now, a couple of things. First of all, this show was on ESPN.
Yes, it was.
And it started in 85. It actually inherited the, I guess, time slot of a thing called Pro Wrestling USA. Regardless, it was on from 85 until 90 on ESP frickin' N.
Yeah, till the end of the AWA, basically.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Now, June 4th, 1990, what we're dealing with here, if you recall, a couple episodes back, we reviewed NWA Power Hour from right around the same time.
Yeah, so that's some context. If you want to go back to the last episode, if you didn't hear it,
yeah,
that's some context as to what's going on around wrestling at the time.
Exactly, and we all know what the WWF was up to. They were building towards SummerSlam.
Ultimate
Warrior. Warrior was a champion. He was going to be feuding with Rude, Hogan, Earthquake, that whole thing. So DiBiase and Savage.
These are what the big boys are doing. And this is what the AWA is doing.
The little boys.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
is where the little boys play. So, obviously, Quinn, to put it kindly, by June of 90, AWA was not doing so well.
That's kind of understating.
Yes,
I think
it is.
It's in the toilet.
It is, but I'll give them credit. It's harder to tell than you would think by watching this episode.
I agree. Most promotions, when they're in the toilet, they look like WCW at the end or something, and the booking doesn't make sense, or, you know, they're outside, like in a parking lot or something.
Exactly.
I don't know.
They're thankfully still in an arena for this one.
Yeah.
So let's get to it. We have, of course, Tony the Tiger in the intro.
Professional wrestling's hottest hour.
Lee Marshall.
Right.
They're great, Quinn.
They're great. So the reason we say that is because Lee Marshall actually was Tony the Tiger, like in the commercial for Frosted Flakes.
Yeah.
Like,
after the original guy died, Tony the Tiger was done by Lee Marshall.
From wrestling.
They're great.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, did he pass away recently, last few years?
I hope not, because he's great.
I thought he did.
Are you sure? Oh,
I think he did.
Oh, no. I hate when that happens.
I know. And we'll have more on him later because we have a few things to say about him. But anyway, so we are presented by ESPN and the Total Sports Network.
I don't know what that is.
Me
TSN?
Either. TSN.
TSN. Toronto?
Canada's. Yeah.
I always thought it was Toronto Sports Network, but maybe that's what
maybe
it's Total Sports Network.
Exactly. And we're hosted by a very young, very, very green, Eric Bischoff here.
Welcome back to Championship Wrestling.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Eric Bischoff.
He's not all powerful. And just some dweeb. He's basically at like Mooney's level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so we cut to our ring announcer here, Donna Gagne. Really?
Now, I speculate here. Is this who Larry Zbysko married?
But I don't believe so.
You corrected, or actually, I looked it up, I think, while we were watching.
It's not who Zbysko married.
Yeah.
But she is no Mike McGurk, I'll say that.
Hell no.
Ladies and gentlemen, this wrestling event is scheduled for one fall.
Mike McGurk is worlds better than Donna Gagne.
Yeah.
She sucks.
She's like the crappy Mike McGurk because her hair is like kind of McGurkish.
She's a little McGurky.
Yeah. So
there's a little McGurkish.
She's kind of like the crappy Mike, and she has the like circus conductor suit.
The ringleader suit, basically.
The ringleader thing on. But she's wearing a dress, we notice later.
Yeah, it's like a skirt dress thing.
Exactly. So that's different.
That's different. Our announcers here are Tony the Tiger himself, Lee Marshall, along with Ralph Strangis. And I had to look him up, Quinn.
Was he any good? I mean, he was okay in this.
He was okay in this. He actually went on to be a very, very notable NHL announcer for the Dallas Stars.
Interesting.
for Hemsky in the slot. Crowd in front. Hemsky shooting. Scores!
But yeah. No one cares about hockey.
Nobody cares. Not on this show.
Our first match here is Spike Jones. Now, he's fighting someone very interesting here. Yukon John Nord.
Now, who is that?
The Berserker,
yes,
Huss Huss.
The Berserker, Huss Huss. But he's not the Berserker here, and he speaks English.
And he has he cuts weird trees down. He has shorter hair and a mustache.
He has an actual, like, axe with him.
Yeah,
which was
real
axe. A real axe. That was weird.
You know what was extra weird about this whole thing?
What?
And there's going to be a theme here of AWA using licensed music.
Right.
He comes down to Werewolves of London.
Yeah.
The Warren Zevon song.
Now, do you have a problem with this? You say he's a lumberjack. There's an
not
issue.
Not a wolf.
No, but I mean, like, he's grizzly, per se, because he's Yukon. You
but
know?
He's from the Yukon, not London.
Well, what do you want them to play?
Not that!
What else could they play?
I don't know.
That would be popular music, because the theme seems to be it's popular music, right? So
yeah, but from when's that song from? Like, 80?
80. That's within
10
the last...
10 years ago!
I mean, they still play Katy Perry from 10 years ago.
She's good.
Yeah, but my point is that 10 years is like songs, like popular music, generally around 10 years they'll breathe.
I just have a
problem. Before they become old.
With a Werewolf of London, you know.
I get it.
Equating to a lumberjack from the Yukon.
I'm thinking because he's like a grizzly man or whatever, and a werewolf, you know.
A grizzly bear is not a werewolf.
I get it, but I'm just...
This is how exciting this show is.
Yeah, this
so
is what we're talking about.
He comes down with his partner, by the way, which is Scott Norton.
Yes.
The that, Scott Norton.
With no beard or mustache
or
anything.
Weird.
No facial hair.
So this match is kind of dumb. It's not that bad. It's a typical jobber squash.
It's not a bad squash because, if I recall, there is no, like... there's no, like, jobber or getting offense on him or anything.
It's your favorite kind of squash,
it's
Quinn.
It's what a squash should be.
It's basically a superstar-style squash.
Yeah, it's like, no, he's going to kick your ass for 5 minutes, and that's going to be it.
The ref, by the way, has a very big yellow mullet. Like,
yes.
It's yellow.
Yeah.
It's not blonde.
No.
It's like
he
yellow.
He looks like...
Knobs
from Nasty Boys.
Yeah. Nord has, like, proto-fuzzy boots on.
notice that? Yeah, they were like Ugg boots. Just without the fuzzies.
I know. And Quinn, you said to me, you couldn't figure out his pants because, like, were they sweatpants? Were they jeans?
Yeah, it's like he had, what is that called when it's the jeans and the, like...
Jeggings?
Jeggings, yeah. But they weren't, like, tight on him. I don't know how to explain it. It was weird.
That's right. This is OVP, where we report on the hard facts here about wrestling.
Yeah.
Nord's pants were weird.
Yeah.
Ralph says that the cement is rock hard.
It's cement hard. So he is inaccurate there, technically.
You're right. It's not a rock. It's cement.
Yeah.
It's a jobber match. Weird camera angles, though, I noticed.
Yeah. The angles were more like they were close to the ring, but on the, like, right side of hard.
It was
like,
weird.
It was weird.
The hard camera was, like, off to the side.
Yeah.
It was cement hard camera.
Yeah. Cement. Cement hard.
Nord wins with the Hogan leg drop, a nasty one, right on the guy's face.
Yeah, he really nails him there, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, it looked good.
I thought it looked great, and I'd say it's a perfectly acceptable squash.
And this interview with Bischoff and
the
Lumber
Wolves. Oh my god, this is amazing.
So Nord tells a story to him about Norton chopping trees in the Yukon, and how the lumberjacks eat a lot of pancakes.
Yeah, what was that?
That was weird.
My partner, Scott Norton, I'm going to tell you a story.
But then he proceeds to explain, like, Big Scott was sitting in, like, a chair.
A big chair.
And he had a knife and fork.
And Big Scott was sitting back in the big chair with the knife and the fork.
Yes.
And he ate 298 pancakes.
Turns out he ate 298 pancakes.
This interview is longer and more entertaining than that squash, because John Nord is rambling on.
Well, here's the big point here, and why this is really funny.
Yes.
Is Norton's all looking proud and stuff on the side, and after he says 298 pancakes, he kind of mumbles to Bischoff. He goes,
"That's right, five more than the world record."
Why does he know the world record off the top of his head?
And why are, like, we putting over pancake eating? In fact, so much so that Nord christens Scott Norton as Flapjack Norton.
His new name is Flapjack Norton.
Nothing, Quinn, says toughness like pancakes.
Now, it's interesting because if you notice, Norton does say,
yes,
he says, like, hey, I know it's not that threatening, And then he says, but it's threatening. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. And he's like, I got this nickname in Lumber Camp.
Yeah, Lumber Camp. What? I want to know, like, the whole kayfabe backstory. Like, do they live in the woods after the matches or something?
So, I don't know.
And they chop down trees and make log cabins and sleep in them on the road.
And then they use log cabin syrup to put on their flapjacks.
And then they break the world record. So is next week Nord going to eat 299?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, folks, I don't want to forget this one. Their slogan is, we don't care and we ain't scared.
We don't care and we ain't scared. Yeah.
Well,
it's kind of good.
That was kind of awesome and fun.
This whole promo was good.
That felt like it was just them, like, trying stuff out.
They're like, oh, world record for
pancakes?
No one
cares about this anymore anyway.
Who gives a shit? It's fine. No one's watching anyway. So we go backstage again to Bischoff, who looks a lot like the Wayne's World version of Rob Lowe.
Yep, bong tasu. Mountain Dew, Pepsi Cola.
A lot. It's almost like Wayne's World came out like 2 years, 3 years
after this. Yeah.
It's like they saw Bischoff on AWA because it's on ESPN.
Yes.
And they were like, that's the perfect, like, doofy, but, like, cool, suave guy mm-hmm. that we need to make fun of in that movie.
So anyway, Bischoff throws to the illustrious Johnny Stewart versus Jim Evans.
Okay.
Now, Johnny Stewart comes out, Quinn. Mm-hmm. In a fake, like, Ric Flair robe.
So he's, like, a rich guy or something.
That's his
gimmick. What they keep saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Jim Evans kind of looks like Wayne from the Wonder Years.
Yeah, he looks almost, you know, exactly like him. Jason Hervey is actually involved in wrestling, so it could have been him.
So we have the shitty yellow mullet ref again. And so they call this guy Stewart here. They call him the possible future Nick Bockwinkle.
Well, we didn't have the chance to figure that out because this promotion was closing up in a matter of weeks.
By Survivor Series. Yeah. It's pretty much done.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, of course, one of the announcers brings up Brad Rangins because you have to.
Okay. Now, I tell you this. I said you were, like, shocked that they were talking about Brad Rangins at this point.
Yeah.
And I said to you, well, they have to, right? Because Vern paid for him to go in the Olympics. They spent all this money on Brad Rangins. They have to push him.
Right. And, folks, Brad Rangins, whatever... He was a big part of the only other AWA review we did from 82.
Yes, that's true. Very true.
8 years later, they're still trying.
Now, Brad Rangins is like in the main event now. He's not like just some up-and-comer. He's like a big deal. He also looks old.
I can't wait to get to that. So anyway, Wayne, you know, Butthead dominates for a little bit, but Stewart rolls up his knee pad and wins with this horrible looking.
So like, it looked like he went for a flying cross body, but instead of trying to aim with his chest, he's trying to hit him with like his knee that's exposed, but not even exposed. He only took like one of the knee pads off. He still has like a pad on.
It was so bad.
Yeah.
Overall, that next Nick Bockwinkle guy, he looked like crap.
Yeah.
There was nothing special about this guy.
There's no way he would have, even if the promotion went on for 20 more years, like he wouldn't have made it to Nick Bockwinkle levels.
So Bischoff, of course, has to interview him on the outside here. And apparently, you know, he's supposed to be rich, blah, blah. But he says nothing of importance. And he sounds a lot like Brian Pillman.
Who's got basically every luxury money could ever buy.
This becomes a trend in this show.
It does.
This whole Brian Pillman
and
stuff.
We're like, who is this guy? And we didn't look him up. So if you know who he is, let us know what you know about him. But he sounded a lot like Brian Pillman. It wasn't, obviously.
It's Brian Pillman when he has a lot of Pollux. Because, you know, like, you go through phases with the Pollux, so...
Yes.
This is a lot of Pollux Pillman.
Thanks, Quinn. So, Lee Marshall is standing by with the TCS update. That's right, the Team Challenge Series update.
Yep, the TCS. It sounds like a fucking airplane.
Or phone company.
Yeah.
They're great.
They're great!
So, apparently, Nikita Koloff...
Why? What? Nikita Koloff was here?
Why would he
show up to this dump? Like, he's in a real promotion.
He was, yeah.
Yeah.
He faces a guy, and it's not the actual timekeeper, but the wrestler's name is Timekeeper Mike George. And
Wonderful.
He said he'd beat Nikita in 4 minutes. Spoiler, he didn't. So he earned 2 points for his team or some shit, however this works. I'd like to give you the standings.
Yes.
Quinn, you want to take the reins here?
I'll take the reins on the standings. So the standings are this. It's Baron's Blitzers. These are the teams.
Baron Von Roschke.
Baron Von Roschke's Blitzers. There's Sarge's Snipers.
Yep.
And there's Larry's Legends. These are the three. I thought there was more teams in this originally, but
yeah, wouldn't you think there'd be more?
Yeah, it seems, but this roster is like nobody, so that makes sense.
True.
So the record for Baron's Blitzers, who are in first place, they are 12-15 They don't even, they're not even above 500, first of all, and they're in first place. They have two draws, five DQs for a total of 30 points. So
32 points.
32 points, right. But the DQs, are they like more valued? Like, there's no way there was five matches. Like, maybe it was one DQ gets you 5 points.
Well, the thing is, Quinn, this thing had been going on since October of 89.
Yeah.
This is a very long-ass thing that they did until August of 90.
Very, very long. I mean, so, this is ridiculous.
So they're in first with 32 points. Who's next?
Now, the next team is Sarge's Snipers, and they are in second place. They're 14 and 15. Again, not 500, but they're in second place.
Yep.
One draw, and they have 29 points.
And that, of course, would be Sergeant Slaughter's team.
I'm thinking this DQ made all the difference.
I think so.
Yeah, because that's elevating Baron's Blitzers right now. Now, then, third place, Larry's Legends, 13 and 12. They are above 500, but they're at the bottom.
Yep.
What the hell?
I don't know.
One draw, one DQ, 28 points.
So Larry's Legends are the only team with more wins than losses.
Yeah.
And they are in last place.
They even have a DQ victory on top of
it. Yeah, I know. It's very, very strange here.
And shouldn't... Okay. You, in usual standings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Usually, if you're 13 and 12, like, even if somebody's had more stuff than you, you're in first place.
Right.
That's not how this works.
Well, apparently with this whole team challenge thing, no one knew how it worked.
Yeah.
They were just booking it by the seat of their pants. There was some, like, alleged $1 million prize that the winning team would split up.
This company didn't have $1 million to spare.
Vern would have to be selling the barn,
yeah,
you know, to be
exactly.
able to afford
he
that.
Sell the property that he lived on or whatever.
So that's a little bit about the team challenge series there, Travis Volz.
Yeah, there you go.
We go back to ringside with DJ Peterson and Rick McCord, who, first
that's
of all...
weird. Both those names are weird.
Very weird names. They come out to TNT by AC/DC.
Dynamite.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
good song.
Yeah.
They're facing the Tokyo Bullets, who are basically two white guys in masks.
They're very much not from Tokyo.
No.
Even though they have masks on, you can tell. Although they do look like two mini Blue Blazers.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. So it's a different ref, which I'm very surprised, Quinn, is not Billy Silverman.
I guess this was just below his standards. Like, he is in everything we've ever... Was he even in that, like, Heroes of Wrestling somehow?
I don't know if he
was. He might have been.
But he made it to, like, the Sergeant Slaughter promotion with Tito Santana.
Oh,
what's it called?
Oh, American Wrestling?
Yes, he made it to that. He's in everything.
Yeah.
WCW, WWF. Not this, though.
Yeah.
So anyway, we get some generic offense by fake Bobby Eaton, who's Rick McCord there.
Yeah, no, so he's Bobby Eaton.
Yes.
But he's got the Rock and Roll Express tights on.
Yeah,
what
so
the
he's
hell?
like Ricky Morton Bobby Eaton combo.
Yeah, it's really weird.
And Quinn, you told me the other guy there, DJ Peterson, looks like Brutus Beefcake and Sparky Plug.
Had a baby, yeah, because he's like the mixture of them.
Then there's a very strange cutaway, and I'm intrigued as to what this is. As we cut to some mysterious wrestler in a mask in the crowd,
or like a fat guy in a mask.
Yeah,
he didn't look too threatening to me.
And
they're all like up in arms about. They're like, "Who is this?" And
ooh,
they start speculating. Oh, you know, maybe it's one of the fans. Some of these fans come dressed up crazy.
Yeah, like, Lee Marshall says that
people come wearing those multicolored wigs and that sort of thing.
I bet you that never came to anything because there just wasn't enough time
to play this whole thing out.
Yeah.
The Bullets get a crappy double shoulder block on Rick McCord. And Quinn, you said to me, you like the AWA logo in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that, actually. And I wish the WWF had done it more. And I think NWA did a little bit. But WWF would never do it. But and you know,
WCW
would do
it.
Like Slim Jim and shit in the middle. But
yeah, that's true. So Enziguri by the barber here, and fake Bobby Eaton with a top rope crossbody for the win.
Okay, first of all, at least he got the crossbody thing right,
and from the top rope,
from the
no
top
less.
Rope. And by the way, in case we forgot, they mentioned something about the fact that if the guy was prone and he jumped off the top rope, that it would have been a disqualification. What?
Yeah, this is very weird. Lee Marshall goes into this tangent, and I'm not familiar with AWA rules, so maybe Ruben Vasquez can let us know here. Apparently, because the guy was one of the Bullets here, Bullet number two, whatever, was standing.
Yes.
It was okay
to jump off the
to
top.
To jump off with a crossbody.
Yeah.
But if he had been down on the mat, that's a no-no.
That's a DQ.
Now, is that an old NWA rule carryover?
I don't know what the hell that is. I've never heard of that in my life.
Me neither. If you know.
Really weird.
Let us know. But of course, Bischoff now interviews McCord and Beefcake. That sounds like a Jake and the Fat Man ripoff.
Yeah.
Why does everyone sound like Brian Pillman, you ask?
Seriously. Like,
these guys sound like Brian Pillman.
I think both of them do.
They do.
Especially Sparky Plug. Like, yes. He definitely sounds like Pillman. And
he does.
I think around 10 years after it, so there's no doubt that he has the experience to do what I want to
do. But McCord does say, Quinn, we were the Central States Championship.
That's right. We were the Central States Tag Team Championship.
Yes. Okay. This is one of my pet peeves in wrestling when someone says they are the championship.
Yeah.
Like, no, you're not the championship. Like, the belt or the title of champion, that's the championship.
First of all, it's not even championship. It's this.
Championship.
Yeah. It's championship. Of course. It's that, according to Vivian. But Vivian. I don't like, how do you not know I was the champion?
Yeah. Champion.
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 So, folks, obviously this is a very exciting show because we're getting into this type of minutia. I do want to mention, speaking of minutia, while we're at it, the bumper music they use when they go to commercial and come back from commercial is fantastic.
It's very jolly. I think we were both kind of bumping to it.
Oh, yeah, we really liked it. I'll give them that. They had great bumper music.
For 80s music, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't even remember what it was, but it was just, you know, that 80s, like, hyper,
good.
Like,
yeah, it was really happy.
Yeah.
Back to Bischoff in the studio. How the hell, by the way, did ESPN pick this up?
This looks, even for ESPN, who's like has like arm wrestling and bowling all day at this point, like this still looks too cheap for them even then.
I know. And you know what's even funnier, Quinn?
What?
ESPN would go to pick up Global Wrestling Federation after this.
The GWF?
Yes.
Not Global Force.
No, not Global Force.
No, I'm just kidding.
Anyway, so we get a clip of last week. Great.
Yeah.
That shows that they have nothing going on.
Well, the fact also that they've already advertised that Zabisco is going to be in this show, right?
And
then they go to a clip from last week of Zabisco versus the Trooper.
Yeah, which we don't know who this guy is. It might be Tom Brandy. We're not sure.
Del Wilkes.
Yeah, Del Wilkes. Sorry.
It may very well be the Patriot. And of course, we clip and Larry's doing an abdominal stretch. Wonderful. Thrilling.
Thrilling.
Yeah, killing time because he sucks.
In fact, Quinn, my sources have confirmed that the Trooper is, in fact, Del Wilkes.
Okay, I thought
the Patriot.
It is. Thank you, Wikipedia, the source of this podcast.
Now, while Larry has the Trooper in the abdominal stretch, he tells him the story of wandering into Bruno's yard. I imagine. Yeah. I just assume
that
he does.
That's what he was he has to put them in rest hold so he can continue to tell the story over and over and over again and, like, screw it up four times and then finally get to the point.
I wandered into Bruno's yard!
Yeah.
That's his Hall of Fame speech. If you want to hear it and you never have, it's that.
I also don't really recommend listening to it because you'll be annoyed by the end.
Or sleeping.
Yeah.
So someone will be annoyed by you sleeping while listening to Larry Zbysko. Anyway, they trade some near falls here while Quinn insists that this Trooper here looked like Mike Sharp.
So, yeah, that was the weird thing. Like, Del Wilkes...
We knew it wasn't Mike Sharp.
We knew it wasn't, but Del Wilkes' hair here is like... curlier and mulleter. He looks like Mike Sharp. Yeah, so
except more in shape.
Figure.
More
yeah.
like Mike Shape.
Dude, he was jacked, actually. I was surprised. I don't ever remember the Patriot looking this good.
No, he was a little doughy, right?
Yeah.
A little doughy, a little steroid dough.
Yeah, but at this point in time, he's like shredded.
Yeah,
like, it's ridiculous.
He was pretty big.
Yeah.
So he gets the massage of death, the Trooper does.
As time runs out.
Signaled by the Royal Rumble buzzer?
Yeah, that was weird.
It was like,
yeah.
Not a bell. Usually the bell
Very
rings
strange.
To signal time, right?
Yeah.
But the massage of death, Quinn. I'm not kidding, right?
Yeah, okay, so here's the thing. Why in the hell would you put him in the Vulcan death grip or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, when you have no time left? Wouldn't you try to pin him?
Right.
Like,
put him in a sleeper.
Yeah, or
put him to sleep
or
at
put
least.
Him in one of those, like, pin maneuvers where it's, like, sort of looks like it's hard to get out of it.
Yeah, like a La Maestral or whatever, one of those things. O'Connor roll.
Yeah, O'Connor
roll. I'm just busting out the names now to fuck with you.
Yeah.
But he literally, like, massaged his traps.
Yeah.
He's and like, then time ran out.
He's like, here, I'm going to make you feel good now.
Yeah. Welcome to Aqua Spa. Yeah. So anyway, the ref raises, like, both of their hands.
No, well, this is what's confusing. So he raises Del Wilkes' hands first.
Yes.
First.
Yes, he does.
What? And we know that time run out. Like, you can tell. But Tony the Tiger is all like,
Oh my gosh. He won. He's great.
Yeah. Larry's still the champion. He cries, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he's like crying that it was a draw.
Because he's a pussy. That's Larry like the storyline. Like,
so then the trooper here tries to take the belt.
Yeah, he didn't win it. That's not right.
Time clearly ran out. I don't know like what his problem was.
Own stupid fault to put him in the Vulcan nerve pinch that never gets anybody.
I know.
Like, it's like Andre beating a jobber on like NWA Continental something or whatever.
You're just making that up.
No, but you know when they send Andre away.
I come here for one reason. I tell you one thing. I come here to win the NWA Continental belt, boss. Yeah.
And just put somebody in a nerve pinch for 45 minutes.
Eric Bischoff interviews Trooper, who cuts a very shitty promo.
Better believe it. Because Larry Zbysko, if there was ever any doubt in your mind about my ability against top-notch competition.
He says Larry was saved by the bell, which is ironic because he does have hair like Slater.
Yes, he does.
Hey, Preppy. When you said Larry was saved by the company going out of business.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was really Larry. Like, when they say saved by the bell, I think they mean that, like, Larry being the champion is because the company was just not going
toilet.
Out. Yeah.
I mean, it really, like, really, really was.
If this company
was.
Lasted any longer and they found anybody of reputable quality, they would have probably got him instead of Larry Zbysko. And he's only the champion because he's married to the daughter or whatever.
Bischoff hypes up today's main event. It is Brad Rheingans versus Larry Zbysko. Come on, really?
Yep, that's it.
Brad comes out and he looks awful. This is the best part.
Okay.
He comes out to Taking Care of Business by Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Yes.
He should have taken care of his hair.
Yes, his hair is out of hand here.
Larry already looks like the announcer version, by the way, and he comes out to Simply the Best.
Simply the Best. Better right? than all the rest.
that fucking song.
He doesn't do his thing with his hands or whatever.
Yeah, his peace sign hand eyebrow roll.
That's his signature. It's like a signature. It's like he's doing the signature, you know? You can't see it on an audio podcast.
Though. Now, we notice, though, Quinn, some people do clap for him. Like eight, but yeah, like, some people are.
Well, that's stupid, though, because he's a heel.
Well,
and he's boring and he's shitty.
Is he better than Brad Rheingans, though? I think he is.
Well, this is the problem, is this promotion was probably set up to be shittier than Larry Zbysko.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's deep, Quinn.
That's why it sucked.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep.
Make Larry look good, so lower the bar on everything else,
yep,
right?
Exactly.
But you know what? If you think about it, Quinn, it's Brad Rheingans, right?
Yeah.
Vern loves this guy. Versus Larry Zbysko, a relative.
Yeah.
Vern must be on the edge of his orthopedic chair for this one.
Oh,
he's into this.
This is his two favorite people fighting. What's going
to
happen?
Yeah, exactly. Quinn, you said to me, I like that Larry went to WCW and was immediately playing second fiddle in the Dangerous Alliance.
Yes. He was never anything of anything.
No.
Like,
and by the way, he's the AWA champion here.
Yeah, and they had to kick him out of the Dangerous Alliance, too. Like, he was
sucked.
Like the first. I think he even got kicked out before Medusa did. Like, I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure he was one of the first.
Now, folks, if you've ever seen a Larry Zbysko match, you'll know that the first 7 minutes is him stalling.
Yes.
That's what he does.
Yes, he's probably the most prolific staller to ever exist.
This like, side of Memphis,
worse
man.
Worse than Lawler, I think.
Worse than Jeff Jarrett
at
as a heel.
At least when Lawler did it, it was at least somewhat entertaining. This guy...
The King is miles better than Larry Zbysko.
Oh, yeah, he always was.
So apparently, Larry recently regained his belt that he dropped from... Mr. Saito.
Holy shit. You're telling me that this company is in such bad shape that Mr. Saito was their world champion in like 90 or 89, maybe possibly?
The guy that teamed with Fuji and was like a million back then and not that good.
Yeah.
Like the worst version of Mr. Fuji.
The worst of the Fujis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the AWA champion in 90.
That's upsetting.
90!
What were they thinking? Wasn't he in Orient Express?
No, that's Sato.
I always do this.
They're not the same.
Yeah,
Judge Cheeto.
Judge Cheeto. It's not the fat tubby one from WrestleMania 6.
No, Sato.
Not the one with
Akio
the mullet.
Sato.
Yeah,
that's Tanaka has the mullet.
The one with Hakushi.
You stop. The crowd chants Larry sucks, but I thought they were chanting Bruno's yard.
Bruno's yard.
Bruno's yard.
You had to throw that in there. You really harp on that speech, don't you? You hate it.
Well, here's the reason why, folks. Quinn and I watch that Hall of Fame live, as we usually do. We watch every Hall of Fame together.
We do. It's like a tradition.
It is.
We should do that for something.
Hall of Fame live this time.
Yeah.
Because we already did our bites.
Yeah, we can't show it, but, you know, people can have us on in the background or something. I don't know.
Right, yeah. We'll do a live review
of the
Hall of Fame.
That's a good idea for next year.
That's a good idea. Yeah. So anyway, the reason why I don't like that is because it was literally one of the worst Hall of Fame speeches I've heard.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's really rambly and confused, and all he talks about is Bruno.
Yeah.
Oh, Bruno's yard!
Yep.
And I hate his voice to begin with.
It's one of the worst things I've ever seen.
It's awful.
Yeah.
So anyway, Lee Marshall here references Ken Patera, another former Olympian that looked like shit by this time.
Yes. He's not on this show, right?
No. But he also looked like crap.
But I remember when we found this on YouTube or whatever to watch, I remember in the search page, the video right under this said, Ken Patera shoots on AWA in its final days. So I guess he didn't have many nice things to say.
It's better than shooting a boulder through a window of a McDonald's drive-thru, well, which was that with Mr. Saito?
Oh, shit.
Ooh, full circle here.
Wow.
That's how exciting this show is, folks. That's the theme here. So anyway, we get some exciting mat wrestling in the meantime.
And I say to you, way to blow the air out of the whole show. Like, yeah. It was kind of like somewhat exciting before this.
It
like,
was
things
okay.
were happening. Like,
then they're
matches...
just on the mat rolling around.
It was pretty boring.
So here's what bugs me. The announcers reference, especially Marshall, the Shea Stadium show from 1980. You know, the WWWF supercard where...
This is pretty, like, audacious, what they say. Like, this is absurd.
There's a lot of audacity here because you've got a show that had Hogan Andre on it.
Right.
And main eventing the show was Larry Zbysko against Bruno Sammartino in that famous angle.
Now, they decide to start mentioning that
Hogan
Andre...
Hogan
and Andre was on it. And they mentioned something else.
Bruno,
but they were mentioning some other man. I don't know. The point is that they start acting because Larry was in the main event with Bruno.
Yeah.
That the people in Shea Stadium, they weren't there to see Hogan, Andre, or any of the undercard. Probably Bob Backlund.
Backlund and Pedro, I think, beat the Samoans.
For the tag belts. Yes. They weren't there to see that. They were there to see Larry Zbysko versus Bruno Sammartino.
But they highlight Larry.
Yeah, but they were saying that Larry was the real draw.
Now, in all honesty, I know that in real life, Larry was a protege of Bruno.
Yes.
But this is probably the last epic thing Bruno did.
Yeah.
And it could have been anyone.
No, it definitely could have been
anyone. It was Bruno.
Could have been
that,
Bob Backlund if they wanted to turn him heel.
It was Bruno that drew that crowd. It was not Larry. Larry was in the feud, but it wasn't because he was good.
Yeah, it was kind of the last hurrah for Bruno.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, but they're making it like it was all Zbysko, but I'm pretty sure it was Bruno in his yard that had something to do with that. Anyway, the thing with Larry Zbysko that pisses me off.
More than that.
This is literally that one angle.
Yeah.
That one fucking angle from 1980 10 years prior to this is literally the only important thing that he ever fucking did.
Yes, it's true.
It really is.
Yeah,
he was mediocre at best.
No, he was nowhere close to any of the stars of the 80s.
He was not the best talker.
No,
he could talk, but he wasn't the best.
Right. He was always just somewhere in the middle. He was a mid-carder.
He is the Jeff Jarrett of the 80s.
That's a good one. That's exactly what he is. He's the Jeff Jarrett of the 1980s.
He got by on nepotism.
Yes.
He got by on one good angle.
Yeah.
That's all he had.
He got by on friendship with Bruno Sammartino.
Exactly. That's all the dude had. He wasn't the worst thing ever.
I mean, he's like a greasy palms guy, right? He's friends with people, and he used that to get to the top.
He was a shitty announcer.
Yeah.
He said New World Odor a million times.
Mm-hmm. New World Odor. New World Odor. New World Odor. New World Odor.
He was awful.
So fuck that.
Brad Rangins is a piece of crap too. He looks like he belongs in the sitcom Wings. Like he looks like just like the fix it guy, like in a sitcom. Like he doesn't look like the Murphy Brown guy, but he could have been the Murphy Brown guy fixing her apartment for like the entire show.
You really don't like him, do you?
No, he looks like shit. He doesn't look like a wrestler.
Not by 90, he doesn't. In 82, he was okay.
Yeah, but not here.
No, he
it's
misses
no wonder
boat here.
Nobody picked him up.
No, I know.
He wasn't in WWF or WCW or anything, right?
I think he was a WWF jobber in the early 90s. Jobber.
He looks like
jobber.
Jim Bronzell when he was a jobber.
Correct.
But
exactly.
He's in the main event.
Yeah, against the world champion.
Well, that's Larry's best. So, I mean, that's not saying much.
The champion of Bruno's yard.
Yeah.
The announcers talk about kicking out of a pin in bed at your hotel or something.
No, he's saying that Larry is like his instincts are so good that like if he was sleeping and you decided to like drape your hand over him or try to pin him while he was sleeping, is that he would kick out.
It's really stupid.
Yep.
Now, to be fair, this match isn't bad. It's just really,
yeah, it's
long.
Entirely too, it's like 20 minutes, like literally. Yeah. It's like I remember it's in, there's 19 minutes left in the show when this match starts. Yeah. And it goes to the end.
Yeah, so it's not bad, I'm not gonna lie, it's not bad, it's just really long. Anyway, we get a savate kick by the master of the martial arts, according to Lee Marshall, Larry Z.
He actually says that was like he's a master of the martial arts, and they, you know, because he had the karate gi and the nunchucks and all that.
Anyway, so Brad gets a side suplex and the announcers sell it like it was the best thing ever.
Well, because something happened other than a chin lock. So.
Now, honestly, I said we would get back to Lee Marshall.
Yeah.
He's really not that bad.
Reagan's a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, you know, I have a problem with the fact after hearing this, like, I knew he was pretty decent, but I have a problem with the fact that, like, he was basically, like, the Nitro Party guy.
Yeah.
And, like, all the nonsense or you talk about the hotline or whatever. Like,
make fun of Bobby.
Make fun of Bobby, make a weasel pun. Like, that's the best they could do with him. And that's so WCW, too, by the way.
I know, but
like, he should have been doing Saturday Night, when Nitro was a thing.
To be fair, though, Quinn, you are talking about a commentary roster that's stocked with Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay,
Bobby the Brain,
and Bobby. That's about it, though.
Yeah, exactly. They could have had Lee over here. Tony, he could have managed the Saturday Night and him and Dusty or something. That would have been fine.
True.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I know Lee Marshall has gotten a lot of flack as an announcer. He has, yes.
That's
in
bullshit.
All honesty, he's really not that
bad. No, he's more than good.
And
good
I'd say,
enough for, like, for any wrestling program.
And I'd say a worthy successor to Rod Trongard.
Yeah.
Who was very good.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you and I both agree.
Rod Trongard
was pretty good.
No, he stays on point. He shows the product.
He knows the moves.
He knows the moves. It's not like he doesn't know what he's talking about.
He's much better than Bischoff was when he started.
I think he's an underrated announcer.
I do too. He's really not that bad here. He's not bombastic.
Yeah.
He's down to earth.
Yeah.
Realistic.
He's only bombastic when it matters. Like when it's like, oh, what a move or something.
Yeah. So
that's when he
credit.
Should be bombastic.
And then but this is weird because he goes in this weird tangent where he says, if you appreciate wrestling, you'd rather have Larry and Brad wrestling than people who take steroids, paint their faces, and talk like geeks.
What is he, Scott Keith?
He's probably some geek.
Yeah.
He's probably talking about the Warrior and or Sting. He's probably getting both in one shot.
Yeah, I mean, this seemed like, honestly, this is like, you know when Schiavone had to say the put the butt in the seats because Bischoff said? That sounded something like Vern told him, like, make sure you take a jab at WWF and WCW.
And if you notice historically, it's always the company that's losing that takes the jabs at the competition.
Right.
WWF did it.
Well, WCW was on top when they did it.
Well, listen, WWF did it when they did the Billionaire Ted shit.
Yeah, they were behind. You're right. Yeah.
WCW did it when Raw was kicking their ass and Tony
Schiavone just starting to kick their ass.
But they had been kicking their ass for about 6, 7, 8 months. So they were desperate. So they were taking shots at them.
Yeah.
It's never, TNA did it to this day.
They still do it. Again,
and Vince doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, they don't even exist to him.
I know. Yeah. He doesn't care at all.
Yeah.
So whatever, who cares?
Yeah.
Rightfully so. Anyway, we do know this, Quinn.
Yeah.
Larry did not take steroids
because Bruno. Yeah. Hell no.
You can't be in good condition to take that steroids.
That's why he like stopped talking to his son.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Seriously.
Yeah. David.
Yeah.
I don't ride with the cocaine people, Vince.
Yeah.
I have Chief J. Strongbow.
Yep. He talks about that also in that video we did.
Yeah,
exactly.
Check that out on YouTube, folks. Very exciting chin lock here by Larry. And then, of course, the abdominal stretch of death. No, really. The announcers sell it like Brad's going to give up.
Right.
But then he reverses it.
Mm.
And then Lee Marshall, I'll give him all the credit in the world.
Yeah.
He sells the reversal of the abdominal stretch like it's the best thing ever.
Yeah, he does a good job, actually. Like, he makes these guys look like they matter.
And Reagan's is showing it to you. He's going to get out of this. Oh, my Lord. He
absolutely reversed it.
Like, they're wrestling. They're fighting.
This is what it's all about kind of thing.
What do we always say about a good announcer, Quinn? They should make you feel like this matters.
Yeah, if something's really not that good, they should elevate it to be, like, the best wrestling in the world.
Yep.
Gorilla Monsoon did that.
He did. Yeah. And so did Jim Ross.
Yeah.
So, again, this isn't bad, per se, but it's a lot of rest holds.
Yeah, it's just a... I don't know. I said 10 years before this, before people flipping and
they'd be flipping their shit.
No, they'd be flipping their shit, but it's before people would be jumping off top ropes and things are quick and stuff like that. That's what I meant. It's like the pace was different already by 90. Mm-hmm. You know?
By 90? Yeah. Yeah.
So like 10 years before this would have been fine, but like we're in Vern land or Larry exactly. land, as he likes to say.
Larry land. Brad with a very nice gut wrench for an extremely close two count. Brad misses a charge in the corner, and then Larry uses his feet on the ropes for the pin.
Yeah.
Decent match all
Not
in all.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Larry should just never have been a top guy.
No,
like,
I agree.
It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't work.
He doesn't look threatening. Nope. He doesn't seem like the best wrestler. He just seems like a guy that can hold on to a belt.
Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, Jeff Jarrett.
Pretty much
exactly.
Jeff Jarrett. So the announcers, this was funny, Quinn, you remember this. They don't even notice, even though Quinn and I did.
Yeah.
That Larry's feet were on the ropes until the replay, and then they're all upset about it.
Well, I actually like that, though, because it sells Lee Marshall's... It's in kayfabe, it's saying that, wow, that was so fast that the announcers couldn't even catch it. And
That's
to be
point.
Fair, in the replay, he got it on the two count. He put his ropes...
Yeah, it wasn't from the beginning of the count.
He put his feet on the ropes
good
then,
point.
Yeah.
Overall, though... Good match. Not bad. Decent.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Just not main event quality.
No, not main event quality. So we go to our final little part of the show here.
Yeah.
It's Bischoff with Brad Rheingans, who somehow also sounds like Brian Pillman.
Probably the least of the Pollocks.
But a little Pillman-y.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Nothing settled now. Nothing settled yet, Zabisco.
He says Larry Land doesn't exist.
Well, thankfully, that's true now, because I don't ever want to be back in Larry Land.
I think Larry Land is actually Bruno's yard.
Yep, I knew you were going to say that.
And then to close it out, back to the studio with Bischoff, who said this match was a treat. Yeah, so are Funyuns. Yeah. Doesn't mean it's good for you. Next week, Quinn, the Destruction Crew.
Yeah. And
Flapjack Norton.
That's the one I'm excited about, Flapjack.
Fade to black. Overall, Quinn, I want to compare this to the other big two of the three.
Yeah.
We did NWA Power Hour, and I'd like to say it wasn't really much worse than that NWA Power Hour we did.
It wasn't, and it was, because NWA Power Hour is kind of similar. However, the roster on that was enormous.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stars.
Flair. Sting.
Sid.
Luger. Yeah, Sid.
Yeah,
Wyndham.
There was a lot of guys on there.
Iron Anderson.
Like, on this, it was like weird tag teams that we never heard of.
You're
and,
right.
Like, all these, you know, Brad Rheingans.
Again?
Yeah.
Really with him?
You know,
enough of this guy.
Listen, Larry Zbyszko is the headliner.
That was the saddest part of the whole thing. Also, the Team Challenge Series. Why was one team Baron Von Raschke's team? That dude was like 104.
Yeah, he
in the 70s.
Yeah, he was way past his prime. I mean, it is a team, so maybe they just figured he could kind of lurk in the background.
Right.
They did apparently have Sergeant Slaughter lurking around too, so that's not nothing.
But you know where he lurked about 2 months later?
Over the WWF, and he became a Saudi
sympathizer.
Yeah, a Saudi Iraqi sympathizer.
Correct.
That's what I meant.
Overall, with this AWA show, I will say this. Much better produced and much better put together and paced than the 82 thing we watched.
Now, I want to say that I have a feeling that was ESPN invoking a bit of rules.
There
seemed a bit of standardization. You know, Eric Bischoff had an ESPN mic.
True.
Yeah.
He did.
So there was, and the lighting probably had to be just some spec.
I'm not going to disagree with that. You might be right about that. But overall, a pretty well-produced show and not a bad watch.
No, not too bad. Just, you know, I probably wouldn't care to watch anything after this.
No, me neither.
Maybe find stuff from the mid-80s when it was hot.
Yeah, the best part they
had. I would like to find something from the period of time when they were like at their hottest, like with Hogan and stuff.
Is that about 82, 83?
We've now watched before and we've watched after, but we haven't really watched 84, right? Or is it 83 and 84 supposed to be the big years for them?
83, 84.
Yeah. Before Vince takes everyone.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So overall, really wasn't bad. Surprisingly enjoyable.
Yeah.
Especially my favorite part, for the record, was John Nord's promo.
Yes.
That was the
excellent.
Best part.
The Berserkers promo.
And that's the kind of shit that you needed on these one-hour shows back then. Is
fun
just
stuff.
Some fun stuff, which they did not have in the 80s.
Yeah.
That we saw, anyway.
Not in this company.
Folks, I want to remind you, please send us your suggestions for anything you would like us to talk about. And remember that in just 2 weeks, we'll be kicking off season 5. Next week is our finale.
Yes.
So stay tuned for that. We know what we're talking about.
Yes, we do.
We already know, and you're going to love it, I guarantee you. So in the meantime, reach us on Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can email us at OVPPodcast@gmail.com. Of course, go to our website, OVPPodcast.com. Go to the Facebook group and leave us a review on iTunes.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
We would love to hear from you. So subscribe, check us out, keep telling us stuff, keep talking to us. We want to hear from you, and we promise we'll do our very best to get to the requests.
Yes, we will.
We really will. Until that time, folks, have a great rest of your day, have a great rest of your week, and stay tuned for the season 4 finale next week.
Ooh. See ya.
See ya.
You know, Bruno kind of said it in a nice way about how I drove the man crazy. Bruno Sammartino, the heavyweight champion of the world. And there was Bruno's address on this piece of paper. I went out of the way a block and drove down this side street that went right along Bruno's backyard. But you couldn't see into his backyard. There was this gigantic row of hedges. Through the hedges, for a second, I saw Bruno standing out by his pool in his tights, getting a suntan. Bruno looked over at me. I don't know how the hell he kept a straight face. Bruno started me out. I walked into this man's backyard through these hedges. Man, Bruno gracious enough to get in the ring with me. You know, that day in his yard when I... After spending an afternoon with Bruno the first day in his backyard...
New World Order!